Hello, big thinkers, world builders, legacy keepers, loyalists, and series enthusiasts. Yep, we're talking about the art of the series today. And I'm Brooke Warner. I'm here with my now serial co-host, Grant Faulkner. And we've done a show on series before, actually, Grant. It was April 2019 when we interviewed Dorinda Jones about the art of writing a series. And that was good. I learned a lot from her. And so we're coming at this from a different angle today with our guest, Michelle Cox, who is the creator of the Henrietta and Inspector Howard series, because we're going to talk about the dedication and loyalty it takes to commit to a series. Michelle is a She Writes Press author, and so I'm interested in also talking with her about being a hybrid author and also about the time, effort, money, and commitment it takes to launch a series and to stay committed to it over time. And honestly, authors like Michelle really wow me with how they navigate the world of publishing, because especially as a hybrid or an indie publisher, you really do have to find your own way. And I know, because I'm friends with her, that she's had some highs and lows, and we're going to get into that with her a little bit today.
Yeah, the finding one's own way is what endlessly impresses me about indie authors, Brooke. They just have to have such commitment. And then to add a series and the pressure of a series to the mix, you're really doubling down. That's serious steadfastness. You know, they're the hardest working writers in the business, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. And I talk to so many aspiring authors who, when they don't get a traditional deal, feel like their work isn't worthy or as worthy. And it's one of the things that I've worked so hard on as a publisher of a hybrid imprint and as a champion of women authors, especially to offer both a way forward in their publishing careers that's not dependent on the validation of gatekeepers, and also to keep people inspired around their own work or stoking that self-validation that comes from within instead of from out there in the wider world. But it does take a lot of confidence as a writer to do that. And I'll also note, in the case of being an indie publisher, a lot of resources to be able to put everything on the line and really make a go of it. And then you have series writers who are just pushing out one book after another, oftentimes a book a year, which is intense. And then when you're doing a book a year, it's not just the writing, it's also the self-promotion and hiring a publicist and doing book trailers and interviews and traveling to writers' conferences. I mean, it is such a commitment. So there really is a big difference between authors who maybe just publish one novel or who publish a book every 3 or 4 years, which is the camp that I'm in. And then these writers who are on the series train, because it is the super express, and the expectations for series writers from their fans for a new book every year is a really real thing.
Yeah, it's intense. I have the deepest of admiration for writers who write series, because in some ways they don't really ever get to quit. They don't get to, you know, punch their time cards out at the end of the day when they complete a book and take a break. They have to always have the next book in motion as one is finishing. And honestly, some of them write more than one book a year. I know some indie romance writers write 2, 3, or 4 books a year, and sometimes more. So it's just a very energetic kind of writing, but that's what the demands of the genre are. I think it's interesting also because the origin of the concept of a series of novels or series of stories started in the 19th century. And it's very similar to the way Netflix works now. There was essentially like a new technology that came into play in the 19th century that allowed for easier to print and distribute books more widely, and then a reading public who then became hungrier and hungrier to binge read. All good. But I don't think this need for binge entertainment will ever leave us.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like you said, now you see that so much with television and with books. For a long time, it seemed like the series were kind of coming in and out of vogue. I mean, there's always been these best-selling series, of course, but it did seem like they'd kind of go out and then come back in. But lately, they feel very in. And I wonder if that's here to stay, just because I don't see it waning. And I see, especially with genre writing, that it lends itself to series, mystery, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy, especially. Michelle mentioned historical fiction, which less so, but I can see how that lends itself to a series as well. And I also wonder, I mean, we're going to ask Michelle about this also, but what drives writers to want to do a series in the first place? I kind of feel like it's one part depth of imagination that you have to have a deep, broad story to tell, and, you know, that it's going going to take much more than one book to unpack. And then I also think there's the allure of being one of those authors who breaks out, because a lot of the most successful books in our culture, a lot of them that go on to become movie deals are series, things like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, Hunger Games. I was thinking about Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And then I was thinking about books like Nancy Drew that a lot of people grew up on, Goosebumps, which is a series that James likes and is also their movies. And we could go on forever with all of these. But there must be a pull here, you know, for avid readers who grew up on these series. And then this has been like a baseline for them. And so then they're kind of maybe modeling off of series that they loved as a kid. That's my imagination for it anyway. But speaking of all that, Grant, was there a series that you were really into when you were young that shaped you or defined your youth?
Yeah, it's interesting for you to list off all those series, because I think it was an age, one of those ages when there weren't so many series or they weren't emphasized like they are now. And so the series I read weren't quite like the series you just mentioned. I was a big fan of Flora Ingalls Wilder and read all of her Little House on the Prairie books and watched the TV show. And then I was a huge fan of Ramona and Henry Higgins. My favorite children's series as an adult might be A Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket. The real life author's name is Daniel Handler. But that series saw my family through a rather long drive to Los Angeles and back and all around Los Angeles while we were there. So it has a very special place in my heart. I recommend reading and listening to it. Its audio narration is really wonderful. But I think of adult literary fiction series as well, which are much more rare. But I want to note Alana Ferrante's Neapolitan series, which is perhaps my favorite reading experience of the last 10 years or so. There's a part of me that's still living with those characters in Naples.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me about Ramona Quimby. Oh my gosh, I read every single one of those. And my dog's name is Bee, but I call her Beesus, and it always makes me smile. And I think about, in junior high, I was thoroughly obsessed with Sweet Valley. And out of curiosity, I looked up a few details about that series. It started in 1983. And it had 181 books in that series.
Wow.
Yeah. I probably read 50 of them, and they were the equivalent to my son reading graphic novels now, like just in the sense that they were pure entertainment, but I could get lost in those books for hours and hours. And I think series are a real testament to how committed we get to characters, right? Like when you really know a character, whether it's a series of film or TV or books, you want to come back. And that's obviously the rationale behind the book series, that if you can build that fan base, you pretty much have them in the bag for future books. It's just not an easy thing to do.
Definitely not. But I've talked to authors who've written series, and they say the one thing that is easier is that the main characters in the story world is present and consistent, so you don't have to recreate it. And so there's less work to do on that end. And I suppose you live with your characters so closely and for so long that they're actually whispering plot lines to you as well.
Yeah, I think that must be the case. And so we will have to ask Michelle that question. Michelle is 5 books into her series, and undoubtedly will have a lot of insights for us about what drives writers to write series and what the challenges and rewards might be. And we'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back, everybody. We have Michelle Cox on the show today, and Michelle is the author of the multiple award-winning Henrietta and Inspector Howard series, as well as Novel Notes of Local Lore, a weekly blog dedicated to Chicago's forgotten residents. She suspects she may have once lived in the 1930s and, having yet to discover a handy time machine lying around, has resorted to writing about the era as a way of getting herself back there. Coincidentally, her books have been praised by Kirkus, Library Journal, Publishers Weekly, Book List, and many others. So she might be onto something. And unbeknownst to most, Michelle hoards board games she doesn't have time to play and is, not surprisingly, addicted to period dramas and big band music, also Marmalade. Hey, Michelle, I'm so glad to have you on Right Minded. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is fun.
So I wanted to start on a fun note, because this is a moment I'll never forget when you and I were at a conference together in Portland and we were riding in an elevator down to the lobby. And all of a sudden it dawned on this woman who was with us in the elevator that you were Michelle Cox. And when she made the connection, she had such a fangirl moment. And I was witnessing this like Oprah style love fest with this woman jumping up and down and yelling, "You're Michelle Cox." And it was just like really amazing. And I wondered what it was like to be the author in that moment, you know, and like, what is your experience of her, of course, but also just of your fan base in general, because you do have a really strong and loyal following out there.
Yeah, that was a really fun moment because I thought that she was going to fangirl over you initially. So sort of turned to me, it was hilarious. But it's funny. I do have a really loyal fan base, and it's so gratifying because sometimes, you know, we all know writing is a lonely business. And when you do get that email or a Facebook comment or something from a fan, it's such a little nugget, but it's enough to just keep you going.
Yeah, Michelle, I'm curious about what drew you to write a series in the first place. I'm sure all authors come to series differently, and I've heard a lot of different stories, but what inspired you and what keeps you writing book after book? And, you know, how many more Henrietta and Inspector Howard books do you think you have in you, actually?
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, I didn't start out writing a series. I just wanted to write a one-off. And stupidly at the time, I thought I would write a mystery because I thought that would be attractive to an agent. And I didn't really know what I was doing in terms of the whole agent picture. But I ended up writing this mystery. And halfway through it, I really, really fell in love with these characters. And I thought, you know, I really don't want this book to end. So I thought, okay, I'll make it into a series, which was a little bit tricky because if I had known that I was writing it as a series to begin with, I would have set it all up differently. But now it was too late. And so I had to kind of switch it a little bit by book two, but I think I did it well. And I think, you know, the fans have come along for the ride. So yeah, I mean, it didn't start out that way, but it has definitely grown, and it's fun for me. I love writing the series. I could go on and on and on. And book five just came out in April, and it's gratifying, but frustrating because I get letters from, and these are pretty big books, as Brooke can attest. But I get letters from people that right after the book comes out, they'll say, you know, "I read the book in 2 days. When's the next one?" Do you know how long it takes to write a book and then just to get it out there? So, yeah, I'm not really sure. There will definitely be a big book six. Where we go from there, I'm not sure. It kind of just depends on, you know, how the ships fall.
Well, it's good to know that there's a book six, and since I haven't written a series, I'm very intrigued by this pressure to keep it going and keep it moving. And Brooke and I were talking earlier and imagining that over time, maybe the characters in a series, you know, start to whisper plot lines into their author's mind. I'm curious if this has been the case with you, if you're kind of literally talking to your characters about the next novel.
Well, sort of. I mean, they're really real people to me. I know that sounds silly, or I would have thought it sounded silly before I started writing. But this series, I think, is a little different because it's kind of a progressive series. So it's not just the same characters every time solving a different mystery. It's really more about their character arc and how, you know, what's going on in their life as it develops. And then the mystery is kind of almost just sort of in the background, something for them to do. So the first three books are kind of really just their own little trilogy. And so then book four was really difficult because I didn't really know where to go from there. And that is when I really had to stop and think about the characters and, you know, what situation they could get themselves in and how they could all tie together and how it also kind of advances their characters and help them progress into, you know, something else. So in some ways they sort of contribute to what the plot is because I can't start a new book until I know how the previous one ends. So by the time I'm ending one book, it's easy for me to kind of start the next one because I've already thought about, you know, where it's going to go from there. So I don't know if that makes sense, but the answer is sort of.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
Really interesting to hear how different series writers think about their books differently. And I imagine we have listeners out there who are readers of series and who are maybe intrigued by series, but not really ready to think about writing one. And then others who actively want to, or maybe are in the middle of conceiving or writing a series. So what kinds of qualities does a writer need to have in order to be a successful series writer?
Well, I think you definitely have to be able to think of the big picture because, you know, you have to be able to maintain this sort of tone, this sort of theme. You have to remember a lot of, you know, characters and a lot of details. So I think that that's probably the biggest one is just you need to be a big picture thinker. I kind of liken it to being like a director of a miniseries or what I would imagine that to be. Mm. So I have this huge cast of, you know, actors and I have to sit down and decide who's going to be in each episode, which would be each book, because not everybody can have a role in every single episode. So it's kind of being able to sort of direct your characters and bring in new people and, you know, be able to sort of weave them into the story seamlessly, which is actually a side note, really hard to do because by now Clive and Henrietta are such old friends to me. It's so easy to write them. It's so easy to direct them because as if they were real people and I were the director, they know what I want from them and they're able to sort of help me along.
I love this idea of characters being actors that you're directing. And I think, you know, series are to me, again, since I haven't written them, I just think I they're just so tough and they're so intimidating to me. There's the writing itself and then the expectations are pretty grueling. And there's also the fan base building and the platform mm-hmm. work, which includes social media and interviews and blog posts and podcast interviews like this. And I know that pre-COVID, you traveled a ton for conferences and other events. And so I'm just curious, what drives you?
I don't know. I love the networking, you know, going out there and meeting not only other authors, but meeting the people who are reading the books or what's also interesting is just meeting people who are fans of the blog, which sometimes they overlap, but sometimes they don't. So that's been really fun. Some people come to events because of the blog and end up buying the books or vice versa. But I also go to me, I love talking to other writers, especially She Writes Press writers, because I love hearing their story and how they got to She Writes Press because we're all coming from such different backgrounds and different times in our lives and experiences. And I just love that because I think that there's an energy that you kind of really share. And that's been really, really hard with this COVID. I'm sure it has been for a lot of people that you kind of miss that energy that you got from going to these things, which I didn't even realize how much I was depending on that. So it's been strange. Now I feel like I'm a real, like, sort of hermit in a cave. And it's been really hard. You really do get something from being with people and talking about books or talking about stories or experiences or whatever it is. So that's definitely a driving factor. And in terms of the writing, I love creating. That more than anything has become apparent during this, you know, weird time that we're in, because all of the promoting and the marketing and all of that kind of stuff is a little bit more harder to do. It's a little bit more of a slog because, you know, you're just sitting here with a computer and you're not just out there meeting people, and that's, you know, really fulfilling.
Well, and Michelle, I know that you have a standalone novel that's either in the work still or finished. I'm curious if you could talk about your experience of writing a standalone book after having been immersed in the world of Henrietta and Inspector Howard for so long.
In some ways, it was easier because it's a much smaller scope. So, and I didn't have all these plot lines running, which I do in the series. But in other ways, it was more difficult because these are all fresh characters, and I wanted to set the book up differently. It follows the, you know, three different women. They're three different points of view, and that's a little bit different for me too. So, yeah, it was a great experience. So I really, really enjoyed it. I really like this book. And I'm eager to kind of get it out there in the world.
So Michelle, this is the come to Jesus moment in this interview.
Oh.
This is the big question. I know you're a She Writes Press author and therefore what we'd call a hybrid or indie author. And I know Brooke expressly encouraged you to speak very honestly about your experience. So we're hoping you'll share what you see as the pros and cons of trying to build a series as an indie author.
Ooh. well, you know, I think there's pros and cons in every form of publishing, whether it's traditional, hybrid, or self. And the thing that has been great about being with a hybrid or She Writes Press is that, well, first of all, you have the traditional distribution with Ingram. So that's huge. So I'm in many, many bookstores and libraries across the country and even the world. So that wouldn't have happened, you know, on my own. And I would say that just the education that you get and this sort of being able to tap into the hive mind, I really think that that is perhaps underrated. That is actually a huge perk that has really helped me because we're all kind of learning from each other or all have different ideas. And there just is a real feeling of camaraderie among the She Writes Press authors. So that's awesome. And you have this creative control or at least creative input, which is amazing. And that has helped. Being in this hybrid sphere, writing a series and not having a lot of writing experience or a lot of writing education, it really gave me that sort of creative space to, you know, kind of learn the craft and to grow and figure out what I was doing and still have that sort of safety net around me. The hard part is that it's been, you know, really, really expensive. And so that's why it's, you know, hard to maintain. And, you know, in many different forms of publishing, whether you're traditional or hybrid or self, you're more and more responsible for your own marketing, your own PR. So that's fine. But what's hard about doing that when you're in a hybrid or traditional is that you don't have this sort of instant access to all of your sales data, which you would if you were self-published. So it makes it really hard if you're running ads or if you're doing a special promotion to really look at your numbers and see, you know, how effective was that promotion? You know, is, you know, what was the cost per click and, you know, am I making, you know, a big enough return? And it's really, really hard to fidget with that, which, you know, I've read is really what you need to do to be successful with that type of marketing. So I don't know, you know, it's good and bad, but you'd have good and bads with traditional and self too. I think you just have to make the best of whatever situation you're in. And that's one thing that Brooke had said, I think, that just stuck with me a long time ago, that authors should strive to be hybrid authors, not just with a hybrid press, but publish in whatever part of the industry suits you best at that moment. Like what's best for this book, that's what I'm going to do. And I've really tried to embrace that where I'm not going to just try to be restricted in any. And I can see, you know, if I stay in this, which I you know, I'm fully planning to do to make this a career, I can see myself publishing in all different spheres.
Well, me too, Michelle. I look forward to, you know, having you back someday and talking about all the different publishing paths. And I really do appreciate you sharing because I think it's what I appreciate about you is that you've been so honest and so generous in the community and outside of the community. And it is all a big learning and there isn't one right way. So I do want to ask a final question here, and I'm going to ask you to step back in time. And since you talked about wishing you had a time machine, that's not so hard to do, but only 7 years or so, not to the 1930s, to before you published your first book, A Girl Like You. What would you tell Michelle then about this industry and publishing a series from your wiser, more seasoned self of today? I mean, maybe partially you answered that just now, but perhaps one other aspect.
Well, actually, it has more to do with the writing part of the question. If I had to do this all over again, I would have learned more about genre. Because when I just started this, I thought I was writing a classic mystery, and it's really not. It doesn't really follow that mystery formula. It gets a lot of awards for romance as well, but it also doesn't follow the classic romance formula. So I like that about the series, that it's sort of a cross-genre blend, and I know a lot of my fans do as well. I think fans or readers are more acceptable of different genres or genre blends than, let's say, necessarily bookstore owners or distributors or whatever, because they're looking for some, you know, where to put it exactly on the shelf. But I wish I had maybe done it a little bit differently, maybe followed a little bit of more of a formula, because it would have made it easier to market. It would have made a lot of the promotion and that type, that part of the series or that part of the writing easier. As it is, it's just sort of a, you know, it's a lot of different things. I've talked to different bookstore owners, and they, I'm like, well, what genre would you place this in? And most bookstore owners will say it's just historical fiction, because you have so many, you know, you have mystery and romance elements. But like I said, it doesn't really follow that formula. So I might have done that differently. Also, when you follow a formula, your books are probably 80, 90,000 words. And these have, you know, just ballooned because I have so many plot lines running and so many characters. And that's great. And lots of people love that. And I think I do it pretty well. But again, I've really kind of strayed off course. So I would probably just say to myself, you know, pick a genre, learn about the genre, what's expected in this genre, and just and follow it that way.
Interesting. Thanks for that, Michelle. Lots of good tips and words of wisdom from your wise self.
Thanks.
So we appreciate it. And thanks for being on with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back with today's book talk.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the book talk today. I have a very strange and different book that I'm reading of late. I usually read books that are either novels or books about how to write novels, or sometimes biographies of writers who've written novels. And I've just decided I need to expand my horizons and occasionally take a break and read something entirely different. And so I'm reading Merlin Sheldrake's Entangled Life, which is amazing. It's a book about fungi. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it, but basically a book about mushrooms. And it's one of the most important books I've read in years, seriously. So I highly recommend it. And what's interesting to me about this book is, one, that the writing is so elegant, but it uses storytelling and metaphor essentially like a microscope. It's a way to see into the intricacies of the world. And the book has actually helped me to think about writing and life as well. And so here's one takeaway for writing. The book has this premise that fungi are smart, that they make decisions. And so the hyphae of fungi, I don't want to get too scientific, but they're the little bulbs that kind of like grow out through the soil and just kind of, you know, create this vast, vast network of a being. And they're sensitive to stimuli. And at any one moment, they're confronted with all these different decisions. And rather than extending in a straight line at a kind of constant rate, the hyphae steer themselves toward appealing prospects and away from unappealing ones. And it just made me think about that the nature of intuition and being attracted to energy and following it. And that's something we need to ask ourselves, I think, as writers, is how do we remain sensitive to stimuli and steer ourselves toward appealing prospects? So I'm going to hand it over to you, Brooke. What's your book today?
Yeah, I love this because we couldn't be more juxtaposed. You just said like the most interesting, cool thing, and I want to go out and buy that book immediately. And I'm about to give the most like baseline, dorky series recommendation for parents because I am in the middle of reading.
Don't undersell yourself. As we've learned in the Book of Mushrooms, it's all connected and magical and beautiful.
I think that this series of books is leading me towards something incredibly profound in my future. But what I am stuck reading with James is Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And, you know, I sort of feel like the whole point of doing the book talk is to give people inspiration for things to read. This isn't exactly that, but it is just like very much in my life right now. And then I was thinking about series and just how series become movies. And so this was just a little aside, but it kind of made me happy, which is that Alicia Silverstone, who, you know, people of our age remember from Clueless, is the mom in all of the movies, which is either a major pro or a major con.
Not sure I feel about that. She's still in high school in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. She's still in high school. We're all still in high school. And yeah, so that's where we're at this week. And next week, I promise to bring something really elevated.
Thank you for joining us, everyone. Right Minded is a weekly podcast. Please go on the internet. You can download it anywhere on the internet where you download your podcasts. And we always appreciate a little rating, but we mainly want you to listen and spread the word. Tell your friends about it. Listen together with your friends while reading in Entangled and Diary of a Wimpy Kid. So we'll see you next week.